Welcome back to another episode of Keeping Up With Data. Today we have a very special guest and a friend of mine, Pan Kutlakas. It's going to be a bit of a different one today, obviously typically, usually about data-centric. Pan is, I will let him introduce himself.
Hey, I'm Pan, one of the founders of Eat Club. We're a dynamic pricing app for restaurants. So we work with thousands of restaurants around Australia where customers can get very last-minute offers by filling tables that would have otherwise gone empty.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people here have probably heard or seen of the apps. They're making a lot of noise and definitely taking a lot of market share in the area that they're doing. But maybe for those who haven't heard yet about Eat Club, which could give a bit of a summary and synopsis about how it all started, your background, and give us a run through.
Yeah, for sure. My background is deeply rooted in hospitality. I worked in cafes from a very young age, and then restaurants and cocktail bars and nightclubs. And I was the manager of one of the bigger and more popular nightclubs in Adelaide while I was studying, and that place was called Distill. And a lot of the concepts and features of Eat Club actually come from my time there managing that bar. That was really not only the first kind of high-level management experience I had for sort of full P&L management of a business, but also had to run the marketing, make sure enough people were coming into the venue. And that's really where I learned the importance of making sure that you're delivering revenue for the business at all times and not having heaps of underutilization, which is really, in our opinion, the killer of restaurant profitability. So I'd do things like send via the mail time-limited drink cards out to people. So we'd get people's addresses at the door, which is, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but it's still everything was still kind of pretty physical back then. I'd spend hours stuffing these envelopes with drink cards that gave you a free drink before 9 p.m., before 10 p.m., before 11 p.m., because you just wanted enough atmosphere in the venue at those times. Fast forward a little bit, I've left Adelaide where I've grown up and started getting my first sort of taste of the tech world and working for what was at the time the first food delivery startup in Australia. And that's where I got a feel for, yeah, building a technology business. And then it was a pretty natural progression to setting up Eat Club. Met my co-founders. We all wanted to do something in the restaurant space. They had some money behind them, which made launching the business a lot easier, which is great. And then we kind of just brought in a lot of those lessons that I learned, one through building the tech business, building the delivery business, but also some of that those concepts from the bar, like using time-limited offers to make sure that you've got enough atmosphere in your venue at all times.
I think that part of marketing right now should be even more, not triumphant than what it is. But for example, Mimi, my partner, she got one sample of a perfume in our letterbox of this brand that we'd never, ever, ever heard. It's a favorite perfume now. She buys it all the time. Every time we go into a shop, she's like, oh, there's that one that got put in the letterbox. So it still works. It still definitely gathers like attraction of the eye. Yes, if you've got a little leaflet in the thing, I throw 90% of things out, quick glance. But if you've got these cool offers, you're going to second glance, you're going to keep it. You might throw it on the whole table and who knows, you might be sitting on the couch one day and say, oh, Eat Club, let's go again.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, like digital channels get more and more crowded. Sometimes going back to kind of old school offline channels can be effective. I mean, we still do a lot of offline stuff to promote the Eat Club business. We do a lot of digital as well, but sometimes you get great cut through. Like yeah, even as simple as, you know, having people on the streets talking about your product and putting a bit of a, you know, human touch to it. So, yeah.
Handwritten notes as well, like simple gestures like that. It definitely goes a long way.
Well, you now can get a robot to handwrite the notes for you so you can pump out like thousands and thousands of handwritten notes with ink. So it's not a printed note, but it actually looks like someone's written it properly, choose the, you know, the handwriting. So that's a little hack if you need to write a lot of letters. Yeah.
I've seen that around a few times. I'm always wondering who's got time to sit.
Yeah, who wrote thousands of these?
It's like when you were bold and skilled and you had to do all your lines
one after another. They dedicated, Jesus.
I think one of the co-founder as well, is you've got a bit of a big name support.
We do. From the beginning, we brought on Marco Pierre White, really just through cold emailing and cold reach out. And he's been along the journey now for 8 years. Every time he's in Australia, we get some filming done and some promotions. He's been a massive help in.
So you had no connections to him at all. You were just
none of us in the team had any connections.
And Ben, my co-founder, just blasted out a bunch of cold emails to like all the chefs, not just him. Like,
yeah.
So he did like the full suite of them, and we got in contact with his manager, and it all went from there.
Yeah. So obviously there's a bit of a difference between nightclubs, hospitality, late night venues, drinks, pubs, music. How did the food kind of come into it? Obviously it's related.
Well, it's surprisingly similar in terms of the economic profile of the business. And it's also really similar in its need for atmosphere. Whether you're a bar, a pub, a restaurant or a cafe, people want to be in venues that are happening and have really great atmosphere. If you go into a bar and there's no one there, you might kind of, feel it out, see if it starts to get busy, might have one drink and then you leave. Like something we noticed when running the bars is once you get that atmosphere right, everyone's drinking behaviors change and they start ordering a lot more drinks. Happens in restaurants as well. If you're sitting in a restaurant that's got some noise, a bit of atmosphere, it's fine. You'll stay. You'll have an extra bottle of wine. You'll get dessert. If it's dead and there's nothing happening, you eat your food, you get up and you go. But then the economic profile is very similar as well. The cost of food and the cost of drink as a proportion of the bill isn't actually that dissimilar. There's some differences in COGS, some differences in labor. Obviously, it doesn't cost you a lot to pour a single beer at a busy bar, not nearly as much as it costs you to make a nice meal for someone. But it's still really, really important to get enough people in the door. There's lots of gross margin on every meal. The one thing that really kills your restaurant in our view, beyond the cost of food, the cost of labor, is having underutilization. So having your staff on and not having people in the door. You've got so much gross margin in your food and in your drink. It's our view that if price is going to be something to get people through the door, you should do that every day of the week and make sure that you're fully utilized or closer to fully utilized than what a lot of venues are that notoriously don't make as much net profit.
Yeah, I suppose with that sort of transition, looking at drinks, nightclubs, different venues and things like that, what were some of those early challenges when you started diving into the food space and with that?
I think starting the Eat Club business, the first challenge was that it's a marketplace. If a customer downloads the app before we have any restaurants and offers, they're going to think it's pretty crap. And if you get a bunch of restaurants on board when you don't have any customers, it's not very useful to them, right? They can be on the app, but there's not much happening. So you have to kind of balance that pretty quickly. We had to, you start off in a really small local geography. We launched the business in Chapel Street in Melbourne. So literally down one street. We had our sales team and we were just running up and down the street, signing up venues. And once we had enough venues and enough offers, we have to very quickly do a big song and dance and get a lot of customers downloading the app and then starting to use it. And then you kind of try and create that flywheel and build from there. And then you launch the next area and the next area. And then eventually in Sydney. And then we're now all over Australia, in every capital city except Hobart, actually. We'll be in Hobart soon. And now in the UK as well with our London launch.
During COVID, things change, shutdowns, closes, things like that. How do you adapt to such a, global cataclysmic event? No one can predict that coming. You started this business and now you're like, guys.
Running up and down Chapel Street.
Yeah,
you can't even leave 5K.
No one can predict it. And it was like totally catastrophic. Like nothing worse could have happened to our business, really. It was an interesting time. The business, we were about 2 years old. We had a pretty quick start to the business and we'd attracted some venture capital investment, which was amazing. So fortunately we had a little bit of cash in the bank when COVID hit, and that was really a pretty special timing. Like we closed a round of funding and got it about a month and a half before all of the lockdowns happened. If that timing was a little bit off, we could, Eat Club might not be here today. But more importantly, when COVID did hit, we lost all of our revenue overnight. So we were nearly exclusively dine-in at that time. You have to make some really quick and super hard decisions We had to let go pretty big parts of the team and have a, you know, have a plan to survive. Fortunately, we had really good investors, even the investors that just put a whole lot of money in like moments before it went to shit. And we stuck to it. The core team stuck to it. And the investors were all, you know, supportive and able to continue to get us through that period. And we used that time in hindsight pretty wisely. We built some really key pieces of technology that we think today are the main reasons that the business is performing as well as it is today. Yeah.
It probably gave you time to like, yeah, you obviously got the fund and you had it there. COVID, everyone pretty much shit themselves thinking about what the hell is going to happen. Like not just from a business perspective, but life. People thinking they're going to die, and it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. I think what was the pivot during COVID? Obviously, you couldn't go. You didn't know when there was going to be an end. You didn't know if this was going to go on 4 or 5 years. It was like nobody knew. No one knew anything.
Yeah.
Like, so you secured your fund and you realized, shit, restaurants are closed. What the hell do we do? Was there a pivot that you were like, right, we're going to be able to get in?
There's lots of talk about that. So this was the debate, and we had this debate quite a lot. It was like, do we say this is going to pass? People are going to go back to restaurants. Let's keep developing technology for the dine-in space. Or do we pivot and do something in this crazy booming world of, I mean, delivery, contactless experiences? This stuff was booming and was attracting lots of funding and doing really well. And it was really quite hard to work that out. And our view ultimately was that people would return to dining out at restaurants. And that was what we wanted to focus on and continue. And we really had conviction that that would change. But actually, it went on for way longer than we expected. And we were pretty certain at the beginning. But that conviction definitely wavered. You know, 2 years in and we're still going in and out of lockdowns. And, the money that you have is depleting. It's still at that point because we still had such small revenue base, we'd almost lost it all. You're still burning money to keep the business alive. But then it turned and probably to give you to put the time into perspective, lockdown started about 15th to the 20th of March.
You probably have the dates down to I still remember my first meal that I had after lockdown and the restaurant.
It's seriously, it was like, I know it feels like, yeah, it's a long time ago now, but it actually still doesn't feel that long ago. We probably weren't able to meaningfully work on the business from a business development standpoint until about the start of 2023.
But so you're in March 2021.
March 2020.
2020, shit.
Yeah, man, 2020. So that's a long time just, and you're right, we got to think about a lot of things and we...
peaks and troughs. It was like, oh, it's open again. And then it closed 2 weeks later.
Yeah. But it was hard even from that sense because it would open somewhere. So it'd like open in Sydney. And then we'd be like, shit, we need to hire some people in Sydney. And then, like, it's back to lockdown again. You're like, oh, no. And then Melbourne's like, yep, we're good to go. And then a week later, done again. So it was like that for months. And so, you were caught up in that cycle. But we got to think about what did we want the business to look like when we came out of COVID. And we developed some really key things. I mean, one of the key pieces of technology we developed in the machine learning space was deal prediction. So our restaurants can get really reliable predictions on how the deals are going to perform at any given time. So that takes the guesswork out of them attracting the right amount of customers they need to create the atmosphere and generate the revenue. And then on the consumer side, we developed Eat Club Pay, which is probably the single most pivotal pieces of technology that we've developed. It was the reinvention of the voucher. So instead of the old sort of like Groupon model where you go and, you know, fumble a piece of paper or show them on your phone that you've got some kind of discount and then the staff member's like, oh, I haven't been trained on this, and they have to go and get the manager, and then the manager's like, oh, no, I don't want to do that today or whatever.
Like that was the system that
inspired that dude.
Exactly. Oh, that's actually only on the potato chip.
So
we developed Eat Club Pay, which is how the whole system operates now in Australia and in the UK. You redeem an offer, you might have 30, 40, 50% off the total bill, including the drinks at a particular venue. You now go into that venue totally anonymously. You pay using the Eat Club Pay card, which is a partnership with MasterCard. It's a card that sits in your Apple Wallet or Google Wallet. You just tap to pay and the offer gets done automatically for you in real time. The staff don't need to do anything. In fact, the staff don't even need to be trained by the owner or the manager. The owner and the manager have their dashboards and they decide when they need more people and how much they're wanting to offer to get those people in the door. And then everything just happens automatically without any fuss. So you don't have to worry about the staff not being trained. You don't have to worry about the server having a
bad
that day.
Oh, I've got this discount.
Well, you can go on a date. You can go on a business meeting. No one's going to know.
Yeah.
It's good. I've used it a good few times.
Yeah, it's the same. The first time I was a bit like, what's going to happen here? What's going to happen here?
The leap of faith.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
But he said anything.
Yeah.
Let's book it again. Yeah. So I can
remember. Well, I was going to say, that experience, that leap of faith moment is obviously a bit of a step that you have to take the first time that you do it. And that's something that we have to, you know, really get people comfortable with through our marketing and through the app experience. But because it's so unusual, when you do it and it works, we actually find that kind of wow experience is much more important than having a way easier understanding of what it is in the first place, because you're like, oh, wow, that's way better than I expected.
Yeah.
And then you tell your friends and...
I think I was just going to jump in there quickly, sure. But like in terms of how I got to know about it, like it wasn't even so much the digital marketing and stuff. It was the word of mouth and my friends using it and saying, have you been on eClub? Have you used this? Like you show in there, they give you a card and you pay for it. You're like, wait, what? I'm like, but how's that work? How do they have my banking details and stuff? It's like, oh, it's a partnership like you've sort of got into that.
Yeah.
But like it is like a wow factor to you. Like this is so useful.
Mm.
I'm now exclusively just looking up eClub deals, basically.
Yeah.
I
can remember when my parents came over, myself and Mimi had went down to a Mexican restaurant in Coogee. We two of us got a meal during the week, wasn't through eClub, didn't know about it at this stage, and bought a meal, one or two drinks, nothing crazy, bill was whatever, $120. And my parents came over and I was like, right, let's go back down to that Mexican, it was amazing, but I'm going to look on eClub, which I did, and I was like, oh, good discount there. Went down, there was four of us. We had more drinks than what me and Mimi had. We had more food. We had more everything. And it was like $10 cheaper than what a meal for two versus a meal for four more drinks was. So I was like, this is good.
You're in.
This is it. So just on the payment side of things, obviously, you're talking about that wow moment. But for you guys as a business, there's obviously got to be some beta testing where like making sure it works and all of the real-time streaming flows into the bank account or if it all works.
Yeah.
How did all of that, like trial and test and error, how did all that go?
Well, I mean, it went well ultimately, but there was lots of it. So really the challenge is when someone puts in an amount in a terminal and you tap your card, any card, you've got 3 seconds or roughly 3 seconds to do everything you need to do to process that transaction before the transaction will time out, right? Before it will say, time out, please try again. So in those 3 seconds, we have to make sure you're at the right venue, make sure that your offer's still valid. We, in many cases, check the point of sale to see what you've ordered, to make sure everything that you've ordered is allowed and there's no excluded items or anything like that. We have to check that you've got money in your bank account, right? We have to charge that money from you. So we have to know that it's come through. And we have to say to our MasterCard that, yep, we've approved this. We're happy for this payment to flow through the card. And that's quite a challenge in 3 seconds. And that's where you have to like optimize for the latency on every piece that goes into that operation.
It's a serious amount of API work in the background.
Yeah. Serious. Yeah, yeah.
3 seconds.
Yeah. Is that when it's, yeah, so when the payment's processing, you've got that. There's like a little digital icon that's like spinning for you. Goes like a green tick.
Well, it happens on every payment, right? And sometimes, I mean, there are times when even just your normal, like you use your Commonwealth Bank card, sometimes stuff goes wrong in their system and it takes too long and it will time out and it'll just say, you tap again, it'll be fine, right? Same with our card. But we have to cram a shitload of stuff into that 3 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I suppose that leads on to the next question around like restaurant profitability and obviously restaurants, labor costs, food, the whole shebang where restaurants might think in theory, oh, we're going to lose money if we get these guys on board. How do you, A, convince the customers that, no, this is going to bring you a lot more money in the long run? And paint the picture for me because I'm very interested in that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of elements to it. I think the first element to it is the general feel in the restaurant industry is all of their profitability woes are from the cost side. So from the cost of staffing, the cost of food, cost of rent. And those are definitely factors, right? Like the more expensive all of your costs are, the more money you have to make to make a profit, right? There's no denying that. But when I look at the restaurant space today, what I think is the most problematic is the volume side. So how many people they're actually getting into the door. And it's not even as simple as that. It's how many days they have a week where they're not busy enough to make a profit. And then how many times of even their busy days are they losing money as well? So you can imagine a restaurant that's like open Tuesday to Sunday, their Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday might all be loss-making days because they're not getting enough volume in. And then on Friday and Saturday, they've got this tiny window where they're trying to cram all of their revenue in. And there's heaps of underutilization earlier and later on those days, where in our view, those are all great times to be making extra revenue. And there's heaps of ways that you can do that. You can do that by getting someone in to play the piano. You can do that by creating some interesting meals that are only available at different times. You can do a lot of things with your concept. We just give restaurants a way to use price to bring people in at those times. And restaurant food is really price elastic. So you give people an offer and it can turn an occasion where someone was going to cook at home, an occasion where they were going to order takeaway from somewhere else, to actually just get off the couch, put their shoes on and go down to that restaurant. And we see that really clearly. So that's the first point on the sort of the general, our general philosophy on restaurant profitability. We really focus on the volume side. How the economics work from a single table perspective, the average food cost at a restaurant. So if you were to spend $100, the average food cost at a restaurant is about 25% to 30%. So let's say they're spending $25 to $30 of variable cost on that food to serve you, right? And so let's say you've got $70 to take and use to pay off all of your other costs, your staffing, and then eventually your rent and your all these other things you have to become profitable. So that's great. If you're going to fill all your tables and get those $70, excellent. You want to do that. If you've got empty tables at a particular time that aren't going to get filled, you're obviously making $0 on them, and it's a lost opportunity. You never get that opportunity back. What we give restaurants the ability to do is say, yes, you normally make $70 when you fill a table. You haven't filled these tables at these very specific times, and you should continue trying to fill them. Like, we're not telling you not to try and fill them, but if you're ever stuck, and this can be done as last minute as you want, instead of getting that $70 out of a $100 meal to pay off your costs, we effectively leave you a $30 or $40 on each one of those tables. It would have been $0 otherwise. We're leaving you $30 or $40. And if you fill 10 extra tables a day that were otherwise going empty, $300 or $400, right? That's something. But if you times $300 or $400 by 350 days in a year, that's a lot of extra contribution, right? Because that's after the variable cost. It's a lot of extra contribution that you didn't increase your cost base by at all, except for the extra food that you sold. And that's, in our mind anyway, like, we have restaurants that we're putting through $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 worth of extra revenue a month. They're filling up their off-peak times with customers that either weren't going to dine before or were going to dine somewhere else or at a different concept. They're coming to this venue and turning their empty tables into dollars.
It's like the total no-brainer.
Absolutely.
It's almost like the happy hour, but like, no.
It's a happy hour that you can control and turn on and off whenever you want, and it actually works. We've got enough customers on the Eat Club app now where you can get customers to your restaurant sitting down in 15 or 20 minutes if you're in a key area, right? Like, if you're in Surry Hills, in Sydney CBD, in Bondi, if you're using the Eat Club app, you open the doors
and it starts raining.
But if it starts raining and you're like, shit, walk-ins are going to be a bit slow today, we can literally get three or four tables filled in the next 30 minutes for you. Like, that's how responsive the app can be today. And restaurants that are on it and are benefiting from it and have a full understanding of their, you know, what their business analytics looks like, can be making, you know, significant amounts of extra contribution.
Yeah. Without having to do anything themselves in terms of marketing or pushing anything out.
No, exactly. And if you were to do the marketing yourself, you pay that customer acquisition cost, and that costs a lot of money as well. We've paid that to get those customers onto this app. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose in that case, what is the implementation process with a restaurant? Right. Let's say I want to bring Eat Club to it.
Now,
what are the steps, please?
Yeah. Well, it's actually really simple and light onboarding, really. You go through a sign up process with the sales rep. That sign-up process, you know, pretty much gets all the details you need for the profile to be spun up. You can then decide on a bunch of offers or decide to put those offers in live, whatever you want to do. And that restaurant can be live 15 minutes later and ready to transact. And the beauty of the system is they don't need to tell their staff or do any training, which you often have to do for this implementation, because with everything going well, if the customer knows what to do, the staff member doesn't need to do a single thing. The customer just goes in, dines, taps to pay.
It's the most simplified thing possible. Is that you don't, for a business, you don't need to do anything. We do everything for you. You make more money.
Yes.
No one is at a loss at all apart from you if you don't kind of use us type thing.
Exactly. I mean, that's our view. Like we, you know, and different restaurants have varying levels of sophistication when it comes to understanding the numbers that drive their business. But what gives us a lot of satisfaction is a restaurant that really understands the ins and the outs and all of the numbers intimately, they see straight away how much extra contribution that it's delivering.
Have you had much like any instances, I suppose, of pushback or where people are like, oh, I don't believe.
Challenging customers are like,
oh, of course. I mean, I think in Australia, the business development team in Australia is about 50 people. So we're having lots of restaurant conversations every day. And as much as I'd love to, we don't sign every single restaurant we talk to.
Not every solution is going to work for
us. Look, the way we see this is we've come with something totally novel that hasn't been delivered before. And we have to break down a lot of barriers for everyone to understand that. I think about it in the same way as I think about, you know, a platform like Airbnb. No one thought that they would want to list their house on this platform where random people come and stay at it. But Airbnb does it. They fight through those barriers and then it becomes absolutely normal. I think we're well on our path to that. We're about 3,500 restaurants in Australia. We've just ticked over 400 restaurants in London, in inner city London. And we're just going to keep on that crusade, keep on that mission to ensure restaurants have an option, a really easy option to deliver reliable profitability when they need it.
Absolutely. I suppose on that note, running a business that's now growing, you're in London, you're all over Australia. Like, what's the hardest part about keeping up with that pace?
Avoid a burnout.
Well, I mean, it changes all the time. It can change within the week. Like, what is the most important thing to be focused on? Sometimes it's hiring. Sometimes it's training that team. Sometimes it's marketing challenges. Sometimes it's product challenges. It's not, I don't think I could say that as it's grown, something really singular has been the thing to focus on. Right now, I mean, we've just gone through a big process of ramping up our product team. So we've pretty much doubled the product team over the last couple of months. And now there was a huge challenge in hiring that many people. And now you've got to integrate them all and start having them being productive, because you've obviously, you take on all of this cost, you need it to result in output.
It's exciting. Like every day is something new. There's a new challenge, there's a new customer, there's a new problem, there's a new thing to fix, and it's unknown. It's not like you can go and, oh, this is a solution to this problem, but you've got to go find the solution or else.
Totally. And sometimes you're building things that are just optimizations, and then sometimes you're releasing like totally new features. A feature that's just about to launch in Australia, we're probably a week and a half away from doing the beta testing for it, is you redeem an offer, you're going to a pub or a bar, you can share that offer with Sean, and then that will activate his card as well. And so you're both sharing that offer together, and you can go and do rounds and tap.
We can use your own cards.
You're
going to activate the card. So it's like
one offer, you can share it amongst your friends and, you know, all participate in the offer instead of, you know, what happens to me a lot is I'll redeem the offer and then I'm sitting there going to the bar every time paying for the drinks.
So they don't need to be eClub users.
They need to be eClub users. So it will allow them to jump onto your meal. If they've already got the eClub app, super easy. They just link up and it's easy. And if they're not an eClub customer, they'll have a quick onboarding to get that card. And then you've, as a customer that uses eClub and knows about it, are able to explain to them exactly how it works. And for us, that's the best kind of acquisition. We want to acquire a customer that's been told exactly how the app works from one of our great users.
That was a story 101 right there. I had an exact scenario where we're at a pub where you guys are obviously there as well. And I had the eClub card, but I was only kept getting synced up there.
Just download it yourself.
I'm like, at some point, I'm just praying for all of this, right? But if you can do like you're going to rounds and something like that would help me.
Exactly. Well, no, it's important. I mean, because we've got there's this very clear concept of like an eClub host, where someone that understands eClub always does it and then gets the money from their friends, and all of their friends have never decided to get it. This is that, you know, this is that push to make it a bit easier to get home. Yeah.
You talked about hiring. Obviously, next 12 to 24 months is going to be very exciting for you guys and scale the UK, global. Like when you talk about that from little Pan and Adelaide, managing the bars, and now you're thinking about what could be global, like not takeover, but absolutely crazy expansion. Like it's going big. Like UK, I don't know about the US, but obviously,
we want to take it global. We think the concept has the has the ability to be a global brand, and that's really our aim. That's what we're going to be pushing for. But one step at a time. We're not like there are so many little milestones that we have to continually hit. And the thing about building, we build a marketplace business. You have a great month. And the next month starts and everything else is forgotten. You just got to now have another great month and you got to have another great month. So that's really how it's like the cliche. It's like the sports cliche, like, one week at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't get caught up in the moment. Yeah. It's the same for us. We think we've got the opportunity here to create a global business, but it's really we're probably 1 month at a time.
So that's obviously a message for people who want to work with you guys. It's like global, the opportunity is huge, but more from the technical aspect. Like you've got machine learning engineers, AI engineers, data analysts. You've got the full package from a data perspective and a tech perspective, software developers. What sort of stack do you guys use for people who may be interested in working with you guys?
AWS.
Yeah, well, everything's built on AWS. I'm not technical and my product people are going to probably laugh and think I'm going to butcher this. Most of our backend is Java. The apps are native iOS, native Android, and a lot of the front end work is like a lot of the web work we do is just React.
And what would someone get working with you guys? Like, obviously, does that scale up? That's what every tech got.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you from the chats that I have with the team, I think. Probably, and this is not exclusively at Eat Club. I think there's lots of businesses like this, but something that's nice is you're not a tiny cog in a big machine that you're like working on some little piece of code that you'll never actually see in action. Everyone is delivering products that you interface with really every day. And I think our developers love to be able to build something and then show someone what they've actually built out in the world being used by other people. That's, again, that's not exclusive to Eat Club, but at the stage we're at, like people are having, a meaningful impact on what the product looks and feels like every day. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so exciting. Like seeing what you're doing. It's like, I did that.
Yeah. Absolutely. I suppose like to round it out, plenty of sellers, entrepreneurs in this space want to launch their next big idea, games like that, Airbnbs, now we've got the e-clubs, and I know there's a team of you that sort of helped to out this business, what was, I guess, what's your biggest piece of advice? Taking what you could say, what's checked your backbone high when, things got tough, the moment happened, right? And is there any way you can summarize that?
Yeah, probably something that I think is very valuable is like when you're deciding to do something, I really believe that the idea isn't that important because the truth is, and I found this out at Eat Club and then other ventures that I've done on the side as well, you really don't know the opportunity of any idea until you start building in it. And I think it's totally realistic that the idea that you set out to build ends up being nothing like the business that you create. And just by jumping into anything and getting closer to it and talking to people in it, you start to find out what the opportunities are. And without being in the space, you're just not in it until you're in it. And then maybe the question around what to do when it gets tough. I've been super lucky. I've had heaps of good people around me to help me out, people that I respected a lot of our investors. And that relationship, I think, has been particularly buoyed by a working style of being transparent, bringing people in when things are going not so well, as much as you bring them in when things are going well. I think, and I see it sometimes, you don't want to have, this outward facing, veil of success when everything underneath is kind of a bit of a shit show, you're much better off having a whole lot of people with you that are sharing that shit show and working out how to fix it. And then the success will come. There's no point in having this kind of two-stage feeling.
Like success of like there's going to be challenges set and down.
Yeah, exactly.
And that support network.
Yeah.
Oh, rosy on the outside and then on fire on the inside. Yeah.
Bring your investors in your investors just have to know exactly what's going on. Otherwise, like it's also just the stress of not like things are going well, things are going badly. But what's even more stressful is like you worrying about how people are going to feel when they find out things are going badly. You can avoid that whole step by just being transparent and having everyone in.
What if is the biggest killer, isn't it? You always think things are going to happen in your head, but they never do.
Totally, totally.
I think that's a natural wrap, man.
Cool, man. Thanks
Pleasure
for having me.
You.
Great to chat.
Thank you.
Lovely.